Welcome to the Excellent Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Today, Sonia, we are finally closing out Season 3 with the 47th episode overall, the 21st episode of the season, Weapon X, Lies, and Videotape. You sound real excited to be finished with Season 3.
No, it's not that. All the numbering of these episodes, as we talked about, has gotten a little wacky. So, you know, statistics aside, whatever, it's a cool episode. Good way to finish out Season 3.
You think so? Mm-hmm. You had a good time watching it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually a very well-made episode and very, like, neatly written, but not one of my favorites personally. And I actually remember being very disappointed when this episode aired originally as a little kid, because I knew that it was the end. I must have known it was the last new one that we were going to get for a while, and it was kind of a little unsatisfying for me that I'd have to wait a whole nother year to get more X-Men.
You wanted to see, like, the whole team together more and
stuff? Yeah, I think so. I think I wanted a little bit more for a season finale than what we get here, which is, it's a total Wolverine past-centric episode.
Right, which is fan service in its own right, because there's so many fans of Wolverine, so many people that are big fans of Wolverine, but
especially in 1995 or whatever it was.
Yeah. But I'm saying watching it right now, knowing that we have two more seasons to go, I don't mind that there's no more fanfare than there is, because it's a solid story, and we'll get more X-Men teamwork next time.
That's true. And really, the show was like doing what's the right word? It was already doing sort of like its bows anyway in the season, because it was a triumphant season. The show was really proved popular after season two, and the writers were just exploring a lot, any nook and cranny they thought interesting. So I think this is one of those nice nook and cranny episodes, but like not. You know, it's like much television from the 90s in the sense that our characters sort of end up where they began at the beginning, kind of thing. You know, there's no real consequences here for this episode. It's just a sort of like a highlight of what's going on. It's not serialized.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, this episode's about Wolverine's past again. We've seen a few episodes already where he's either flashed back to his past or we've gotten something a bit more in depth. Here it's like, I guess it takes it from another angle. They introduce a character, Silver Fox, who is one of Wolverine's lost loves, and sort of a character we see in the Wolverine Origins movie, the really bad Wolverine Origins movie. I forget if she's actually Silver Fox in the movie. I don't remember. We're going to have to discover that when we watch that movie for the podcast. But, you know, a very similar character. And we get more Sabretooth and more of this, like, side character we've seen a few times called Maverick, who is one of Wolverine's, like, French-Canadian action buddies from the past. You know, in this episode, probably asks more questions than it answers in a lot of ways, which I think was another disappointing thing for me as a kid. I think I wanted a bit more, because I'd probably been reading as much as I could backstory at the time, the 90s, whatever comics I can get my hand on, or Marvel Encyclopedia, and Wolverine's origin had still not been fully hashed out yet, so there's a lot of questions. Later in the 90s, they really answered all the questions, and it ended up proving to be terrible. You know, they revealed what Wolverine's real name was, which is James Howlett, which was horrible, I thought. Like, I didn't get that. Like, why is he Logan, and then why is he James?
Right, just let him be Logan.
Yeah, like, let him be James Howlett. I mean, not James. Let him be Logan Howlett.
Yeah.
First of all, Logan's a badass name, especially for this guy. He was really synonymous with his name being Logan. It was always a mystery that he was just known as Logan with no last name. That's all he knew of his past. So I just always found that so stupid. That there's like he had another name.
Right.
It's like let it be Logan something.
Right.
And I don't know. That I just always thought that was really bad writing, whoever in the comics world came up with that.
Maybe they felt like that was an anticlimactic reveal if they just were like, yep, you really are Logan.
Yeah, but Logan like, what? I mean,
Logan Smith.
Last
be like, all right, well.
Well, I mean, last, like, mysterious last or first names were a big trope in the 90s, I think. Well, maybe not a big trope, but I'm thinking of, like,
maybe for us because we were kids and you're trying to like find out your teacher's first name or something.
But it's not just kids. It was like Kramer on Seinfeld. They had a whole stupid episode where they finally figure out what his first name is.
Right, and then there's, like, a lot of celebrities that only had one name. Cher, Madonna,
Prince. Era. Yeah, exactly. I had no idea what Madonna or Prince's real names were, or if those were their real names.
Yeah.
Which is weirdly true in both Madonna and Prince, that those were their real first names. But Kramer's first name, hilariously Cosmo, which is a joke that only gets better with age. Cosmo! And now I feel like it was, like, such a funny name, Cosmo, at the time. But now I feel like Cosmo's a pretty funny, pretty cool name to have.
Yeah.
I think, like, there's a lot of Cosmo acceptance out there in the world.
I don't know anyone with that name.
I don't either, but I'm saying if I met someone named Cosmo, I wouldn't think it's, like, a joke. But in the Seinfeld episode, it was, like, played up for such laughs that his name was Cosmo. I don't know why I'm talking about Cosmo Kramer. That's okay. So we get some more Logan backstory. That's the theme of this episode. It opens up, he's having a dream, a real violently, like, terrible dream, where he's being attacked by Sabretooth. He's hanging out with his girlfriend, Silver Fox, she's this Native American woman who's really beautiful and has silvery hair. So
does she? Looks black to me.
In the flashback it's black, but in the present day it's definitely silver.
Oh yeah, right.
Right. I don't know, I think even in the flashback of silver, I didn't write down that detail. I didn't notice it at the time. But it's funny to notice this is all a dream, and I guess his dreams are so bad that the X-Men have strapped him to a bed with, like, heavy leather supports.
Like restraints.
Yeah. And so he's just freaking out, you know. Everyone's really concerned, and we see Professor X by his bedside trying to do his patented mental telepathy therapy.
His unhelpful mind meld.
Yeah, here we see another classic X-Men TAS trope, which is Professor X is really bad at therapy.
Yeah.
Just because you have the power to enter someone's mind does not mean you know how to effectively,
like,
treat
help them
someone.
Once you're in there.
Yeah. Especially Professor X. And, I mean, honestly, yes, Logan has had some trauma in his life, some serious trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But when Professor X ever enters his mind, Professor X can't help but screaming. It's so bad and terrible. But I feel like Wolverine himself is relatively well-adjusted enough that he could deal with it on some level. You know, he hasn't lost his sanity.
Uh-huh.
He does go berserk a little bit and have to run away at times, but he has the presence of mind not to want to hurt his friends for the most part.
Right.
You know, he knows he needs to get away from people. So I'm just saying that Professor X, it's like he can't even, like, ride, like, the crescent wave of Wolverine's emotions objectively. You know, he's just, like, so affected by them himself.
Or maybe it's that Wolverine is suppressing it so deep, and that's what Professor X is tapping into. Wolverine himself doesn't feel the impact of it, but
it's such a festering wound to the wimpy Professor X that he can't help but be overwhelmed. I don't know either. The point is, Professor X is terrible at therapy, and he's the last guy you ever want to go to. Be wary of all telepathic therapists is the lesson of the show. You know, and so Wolverine busts out of his leather restraints. That's how serious this is. He starts hacking and slashing at the X-Men. Beast says, "I fear for what you might do." Beast is really concerned in this episode as well. He becomes a major player. Wolverine, we get a nice little shot of him running away in just his pants.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have
shoes.
Yeah, no shoes, just his yellow pants. I thought that was funny. And Jean is sort of rummaging through Wolverine's things in his room, and she discovers a letter he got a couple of weeks ago. And it shows a picture of him with Silver Fox. And that's what's triggered his emotional, like, instability.
Mm-hmm.
And
luckily, it has the exact coordinates for the location where the picture was taken.
Yeah, this is, like,
Like, scribbled on the back.
I mean, you
like
think,
all photographs do.
Yeah. You think that she'd write an address, not coordinates.
Yeah.
But apparently, Silver Fox wants him to meet at these coordinates. But it's driven Wolverine insane, the thought of it. And Jean's kind of, like, crying. She's also emotionally wounded by all this. And she asks Beast to go after him.
Mm-hmm.
But why aren't all the other X-Men following him?
I don't know.
Why is it Beast's job to track
Wolverine?
Maybe
they're busy with another mission.
It didn't seem like it. They all seem to be hanging out at Wolverine's bedside. Cyclops was there. You know, So I'm not sure why it's only up to Beast to go to Canada. So they're off to southern Canada, and Wolverine gets there first, and it's to the Weapon X facility. There's some more flashbacks. This episode uses a lot of animation from the previous Wolverine past episodes. Yeah. So it's like another little cheap-out episode where they're just recycling some stuff they've already done.
Right.
But, you know, it's not the X-Men producers' fault, I think, that they had to do what they could with the limited budgets they had.
Yeah. Well, also for the viewers that didn't see what happened in the previous Weapon X episode, you want to catch them up a little
true.
Bit.
Yeah.
But while I was watching it, I kept feeling like, didn't we just talk about this? And then I realized, like, yeah, we saw the Weapon X episode, and then we also talked
There's
about
like
the
an
movie
Alpha Flight episode, yeah.
Where this, like, same sort of setting just happened, mm-hmm. so...
There's some really great dialogue in this episode, though. So when Beast tracks Wolverine down, Wolverine's like, "You gotta stay away with me. I'm going nuts." It's just this like real declarative and self-aware.
Just calling it like it is.
Yeah, and Beast is like, "What is this place?" And another great line from Wolverine: "I got my bones here."
Yeah,
and that's just really cool.
It makes you want to like, but
yeah. Well, just the way he refers to his adamantium skeleton as his bones.
Yeah,
and. And then there's just, like, some more I think we haven't seen these flashbacks yet. They show some Weapon X training. You know, they put that iconic helmet on him with the holographic visor that they showed in Days of Future Past and X-Men Apocalypse. They finally used it. It's originally from the Weapon X comic. So we see that. It's kind of cool. And he's doing his training exercises where the professor guy, not Professor X, the guy who controlled Weapon X is controlling him. And actually, in this episode, the Professor X guy makes the distinction because... In the Yuriko episode, which is also showed Wolverine flashbacks, Yuriko, another long-lost love of his, she reveals that Wolverine killed her father during the Weapon X project because he was the one who created the adamantium bonding process. Mm. But here, in this episode, this other professor, who I thought we would assume was Yuriko's father, mentions Yuriko's father as the guy who did the thing, like Professor Okiyama or something. I forget the guy's name, but something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, another weird little twist in storytelling. When did Wolverine kill her father? Because she's so bent on revenge for him.
Right.
But it's not this guy. And this professor survives as well. So, I don't know if that's a plot hole or if there's just something I don't know about the Wolverine backstory. Mm-hmm. People could fill us in
right.
if they know.
Right. And then when they do the movies, the only like villain they really introduce is William Stryker.
Right, yeah.
And have we seen him yet in this?
I don't think he's in the cartoon.
No, I don't think so either.
No, is he? Maybe. I don't... He might have been repurposed with a different name in some episode we haven't seen yet. I don't remember. Hmm. There's Gyrek and there's Trask. That's where I thought like maybe Stryker was part of them, but I don't think so. He might come. I don't remember. But, in the movies, it's not... They don't have this bald professor guy. He's not a character in the movies at all. It's all Stryker, you're right.
Yeah.
And Yuriko's in the movies, but she's not really connected to Wolverine's past in any way that they hint at.
Right.
So, these cartoons are a little more accurate to the comics. Mm-hmm. Because that professor guy is, like, a big part of... the Weapon X comic, the bald, not Professor X.
Yeah.
So anyway, where were we? So there's more flashbacks to his past. There's more memories of Silver Fox. He seemed to have quite the affair with her. And Wolverine, you could see part of the reason why he's really upset at Sabretooth is because he was always ruining his relationship with Silver Fox, which is something they also like do in the Wolverine origin movie as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like Victor Creed getting in the way of Wolverine's happiness with you know. And Sabretooth is also drawn to this facility too, so he drops in and Wolverine thinks that Sabretooth sent him here as a trap, but Sabretooth thinks that Wolverine was trying to set him up. But it turns out they've all been they've been set up by Silver Fox in the end.
Right.
She's the one who did all the setting up. We'll find out why later. Wolverine and Sabretooth tussle around in the lab a bit, and Wolverine gets the upper hand, as he always does. He's better than Sabretooth. There's just no getting around that. He can always beat him. And then there's even more flashbacks. It's the episode of flashbacks. We see Sabretooth mentions that... Wolverine says, I know not to trust friends because of you, Sabretooth. Sabretooth says, I'm the reason you're alive today. And they flash back to their secret agent days, which is another, like... confusing aspect of the Wolverine backstory, because like the story is that Wolverine was in Weapon X, he escaped and like blew up the facility, right? Mm-hmm. As we saw in the Alpha Flight episode, he runs into the woods and he gets rescued by the Alpha Flight team members. I forget their names right now, but like Vindicator and his wife, they're part of the secret Canadian government force. They take Wolverine and he joins Alpha Flight. Wolverine gets sick of Alpha Flight, quits, and joins the X-Men. Mm-hmm. But at some point in between Weapon X and Alpha Flight, he's part of this other like secret Asian force with Maverick and Silver Fox and Sabretooth, and they're like fighting like the Russians in the Cold War and fighting Omega Red, you know, the guy we saw in the Colossus episode, the Cold War version of like Weapon X, essentially. So it's like, what, like, when did all this stuff happen? Like, when was he like turned into Wolverine? When did he get his bones? Did he, was he in the secret agent force before they gave him his bones? And if that's the case, like, he knew Silver Fox before then? I don't know.
Well, he is like 200 years old or something, right?
Well, yeah, something like that.
Like, he's really old. And like, when you imagine how much stuff happens in a normal lifetime and then double it, it's not impossible. But didn't they give a date, actually?
Yeah,
it's here, where they said, wasn't it, it was like 1973.
That's when we see in the professor's screen, he's doing the experiments on Wolverine and Sabretooth. The date says October 17th, 1973.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So that puts it about 20 years before the X-Men cartoon.
Right.
Because that took place in the mid-90s.
And that's like about the time when he got the adamantium, right?
Right.
That's what they're saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, 20 years is plenty to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but the question is, like, when, who was he working for and when? Because why was he in, why was he teamed up with, was he teamed up with Sabretooth and Silver Fox and Maverick before they did the experiments on them? And was the people doing the experiments the one who, the ones who are in control of the secret missions that they would do as like the secret Canadian forces? And but then it was like also weird that Alpha Flight, he joins immediately after Weapon X, and they're also part of the secret Canadian military government, and they also had ties to Weapon X too. Like, it's all like something like blurred out and bizarre. Someone's gonna have to explain that to us.
I don't know all the details of the timeline, but right. I enjoy that so much happens in Canada, especially because so many of the actors on this show are Canadian, and even the ones where the characters are not Canadian, you hear it slip out sometimes. They'll be talking to somebody and they'll be like, oh, sorry.
Or like,
you know, like a little Canadian accent will come through.
Like, the X-Men make Canada cool. Starting with Wolverine, who's like the greatest Canadian superhero, and the fact that there's like, they, there's in the X-Men universe, the Canadian secret forces and military is like really badass and hardcore and up to like no good.
Well, Canada is really cool, like in real life. I don't know about the secret forces.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you, but, like, that, it, like, you don't, exactly, you don't think about the Canadian secret forces.
Right.
And I mean, in real life, Canada does have like an intelligence agency, and they work closely with the United States and all our military and stuff. And they're part of like the secret seven, whatever, like England, America, Australia, New Zealand, like all the weird, in France, you know, like mainly the English speaking countries where we have this, the, what's it called? The special friendship with England kind of thing. So like Canada's part of that, and they're part of our like secret, like military status, and a lot of that has to do with like their proximity to Russia in a weird way, you know, like as like a frontier. If there was ever, you know, talking about the Cold War times, if there was like ever a frontier invasion, you know, America and Canada would have to combine forces to, you know, I'm sure like America has, I don't even know if this is true or not what I'm about to say, it's all bullshit, but like I feel like American ICBMs are buried in the Canadian like wilderness too, you know, our missile systems and things like
that. Is Canada really in close proximity to Russia?
It's not like
Alaska is the front line, really.
Yeah, okay.
If that was going to be a thing for a Cold War,
I'm just confusing. Like, I'm confusing all my like apocalyptic, like fiction that I've read throughout the years, where Canada, like, where there's a Russian invasion and Canada is like a frontier, like.
No, the only reason I said Canada was cool is because like tons of really great celebrities have come out of Canada.
I know
they
Canada's
have like
cool,
super progressive like social policies and healthcare and all that stuff, and then also like all this X-Men action is happening there, and I feel like it's just an underappreciated country.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I appreciate that it's making an appearance here in such a big way.
I agree. That's all. I'm not talking about like cultural Canada, which is cool. I'm talking about the weird military side of Canada.
I know you are.
I know. I'm just saying, I'm really fascinated by Canada's military structure. It's kind of strange to think that, like, because, you know, when you're a kid, you think of Canada as like this big block of a country. But in reality, Canada's like, it's like a few cities dotting the American border, right? A few habitable cities. You know what I mean? Like across this long stretch of expanse from the east to the central to the west, and with what's the Canadian population, like 20 million or something. So it's like this weird, it's like this weird, like, it's not what you think it is when you're a kid looking at the map of Canada, where you think, like, all the people must be spread out over this landmass. It's kind of like Australia in a way, where, like, the middle of Australia is totally inhospitable because it's all, like, an outback desert. In Canada, it's like the entire north is...
frozen tundra.
Yeah, sparsely populated, you know, Inuit tribes might live there, maybe not even anymore, and, like, you know, weird mining loggers and stuff and gold miners live there, but not in any great number. Like, the real population in Canada is this thin strip above, like...
Well, not even, it's mostly on the coasts.
Yeah, right. It's on the coasts, and it's like, right, and any other civilizations on the strip above the main border of the United States. So, like, from that aspect, it's like a weirdly, it's like to see Canada where all its population be if you just cut out the rest of it. Mm-hmm. It'd like be this weird strip of a country.
But to be clear, that's not only because of proximity to the United States.
No.
That's like climate wise.
Yeah, yeah.
Like geography made it that way.
Right, yeah. You know? It's just a weird... Canada, let's learn... You know, when I was in college, I really wished... I was wondering to myself in college 10 years ago. I was like, why isn't there Canadian history? I really want to learn... It's this big-ass country right to the north of us. You know, I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
And to this...
Well, you know a few things about it.
Mainly through the X-Men and fucking bullshit, like science fiction. And because, you know, Michael J. Fox and other celebrities that, like, oh, Alex Trebek, he's Canadian? Wow. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, yeah. But anyway, I think our friend Adam is Canadian. He'll have to...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, guys, you can enlighten us with all the Canada facts.
Yeah, he's probably cringing during this whole conversation.
Sorry to all you Canadians out there.
That's okay.
I'm pretty sure my high school yearbook quote was, "Oh, Canada."
Why?
I don't know. Because what are you going to say in a high school yearbook quote
that's really,
like,
funny.
Meaningful?
You know, I got to say, I love the Canadian national anthem. Speaking of O Canada, I like it so much more than the American national anthem. In terms of, like, a melody, it's beautiful. I just remember I had this baseball video game as a little kid.
More.
Yeah, in 1992 called Hardball 2. And they had one, you know, they had the Toronto Stadium where the Blue Jays play.
Uh-huh.
And before the game, they had, like, a little 8-bit, like, national anthem play. But for the Canadian stadium, they had the O Canada play. And I just always love that touch. Big fan of O Canada. So no wonder we're together. It was destiny. All right, so what's going on here? So Silver Fox explains that she's the one that gathered everyone together in this Weapon X facility because they're all being tortured in their dreams by, like, all the brainwashing that happened to them when they were being experimented on. So they discover in this facility there's, like, this fake town that, you know, they thought was, like, their actual memories and their real lives, and Beast comments, "Created memories, how tragic," you know, and there's, like, a diner and, like, a house, and every time they see something, their brains are attacked by red energy, and they, it's, like, excruciating for them, and they flash back to traumatic events, like, Sabretooth's, like, father was gonna beat him, and I think the father was suspiciously voiced by the guy who was the professor, you know. I noticed that. Jebediah Creed.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, so it was kind of like the professor's, like, really the one fucking with them, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. And what else happens there? Beast has, like, a funny Alfred Tennyson line. Alfred, right? That's Tennyson's first name. I might be wrong on that. You're seeing, Canadians, how much the American education system failed us. A lie, which is half a truth, is the blackest of all lies, says Beast. So that's like a theme of this episode, too. I thought that was a very poignant Beast quote.
Uh-huh.
And also adding to Beast just quoting famous literature and stuff, which is I always enjoy that. And that one was short enough for me to write down in time. His lines are, like, really long Shakespeare sonnets that I can't. I try to write them down as we're watching the episode, and it just goes by too fast.
Yeah, well.
I can't. You know, and Beast discovers the professor's files and what he did. They used chemicals and drugs and, like, holograms to brainwash them and to make them, like, more effective soldiers or something. And he also reveals that because Wolverine and Sabretooth have healing power, that he's also going to give the adamantium skeleton to Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
But because Wolverine destroyed the facility, Sabretooth never got the bones.
Right.
I think
Sabretooth, like, kind of grimaces at him. He's like, oh, like, I could have had metal bones too, or something.
He said, I could have had tin bones.
Tin bones.
Yeah,
that's
kind of funny.
Yeah. And Wolverine's like, oh, you should thank me. Like,
which is weird because I feel like, other than the trauma of Wolverine being given the adamantium skeleton, it's really awesome.
Yeah, it's like a huge part of his identity now.
Well, not just because he has the claws, but because I feel, you know, he feels pain, right?
Mm.
So, you know, but he has the healing factor. So if he so if Sabretooth breaks his bones, it hurts him, but they heal. But Wolverine can't ever break his bones, so that saves him some pain, right. I feel. So it's useful to have the skeleton, I think, because, you know, his bones can't be broken. It's one less thing that his body is not going to be traumatized by.
Right, except that he has severe psychological trauma.
Yeah, I guess. So, yeah, you're right. I guess he would trade
that. But I guess Sabretooth does, too, even though he doesn't have the metal bones.
Right, so. Yeah, they're both psychologically destroyed in a lot of ways. So, you know, I always thought as a kid, I was actually shocked to discover that. I always was certain that Sabretooth had an adamantium skeleton as well, but I guess he didn't. I think in the comics, maybe he gets it at some point and gets taken away. I don't know. Some weird stuff happened where Wolverine loses his skeleton and gets it back. And with
the I remember that storyline vaguely.
Well, that's like one of the most famous, awesome storylines. It was really the culmination of when the X-Men were sort of rebooted in the 90s and they had their highest selling comics. It was the Jim Lee era. It starts with X-Men number one, which sold like 10 million copies, which is still like maybe a record to this day of comics sold. But then that storyline progresses, and like by the 25th comic, that's the one where Magneto rips out Wolverine's adamantium skeleton.
Right,
and
it's
super traumatic and screws him up, and it was really sad.
To me, that always sounds like it's more painful than getting the skeleton to begin with.
Yeah,
you know?
And
like,
they show in the comics, it looked horrific and painful. Magneto destroys him. Like, Wolverine, Jean Grey has to hold Wolverine's, like, shabbled body together with telepathy, and he's just dying. Like, his healing factor can't save him, and after that, they discover that he had the bone claws. I hated this whole plotline in the comics. One, it immediately neutered Wolverine right away. At first, he was weak. His healing power didn't work right. And it like kind of aged him, too, at least in the way they drew him. You know, he looked really old after that and really crappy. And, I don't know, it's like this whole weird thing where he wanted to, like, quit the X-Men, and Jubilee was really sad about it. And I stopped sort of collecting the comics at that time. You know, I was 10, 11. I don't know how old I was, but I didn't pick up the comics again until my 20s. But I know that the comics and quality nosedived a bit in the 90s after that point. It didn't really pick up again until the 2000s with Grant Morrison and Joss Whedon. Anyway, so yeah, that would have been like if the X-Men TAS show continued, I think they would have, if they could have gotten away with it, that would have been an amazing episode to see.
Yeah.
That, you know, like the final confrontation between Wolverine and Magneto where he rips out the skeleton.
Yeah, especially because they keep dipping back into this Wolverine backstory
It's
a long and convoluted story and fans like learning more about Wolverine. They could have gone back to it again.
It's just like a moment they haven't like done in the movies either too that they really could have done. Where, you know, Magneto versus Wolverine, and it's just like a horrific trauma. Like, that's a great idea for a movie. You know, maybe in the future Marvel reboot with Disney, they might go there as a huge dramatic plot point.
Yeah.
The trick is, once you take away his skeleton, you have to give it back to him, too, which is... The way they did in the comics was stupid. I think, like, Apocalypse gives it back to him, which is... Whenever you have Apocalypse, it's a bunch of bullshit. Because, you know, I don't know. It's just... He can do anything, so it's just, like, of course... what else is going on here? So they all have to open this door. There's like this big secret door, Silver Foxes, that we all must open together. And that door, you know, Beast says it's a trap, obviously. It's like, why would the solution be so obvious?
Right.
And Wolverine's like, I know it might be a trap, Beast, but if there's anything back there that might give me an answer to my life, I gotta find out. Is that, you know, something stupid like that.
At this point.
There's a funny detail, too. There's a lot of fun details in this episode. Sabretooth takes off his glove, his brown glove, to press on the door, which I thought was, like...
You're wondering, why does he wear gloves?
I don't know if I was wondering why he's wearing gloves. It was just kind of surprising to see that he is wearing gloves.
You notice for the first time that he's wearing gloves.
It's hard to tell what's going on with this costume is the point.
Because how much of it is skin and fur and how much of it is clothing?
Because his hand is pink like the rest, or tan like the rest of the other part of the costume when he takes off the brown glove. But then it's almost like, is he wearing a big brown G-string thong, man thong thing? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Like, that's like, I didn't even think about it until just this moment. Like... I don't know what's going on with Sabretooth's outfit. Someone please explain that, because now it's really disturbing. Is he just wearing, like, a large, like, man thong, you know,
like unitard
going over his crotch? Yeah, oh my God. All right, moving on. They open the door, and surprise, surprise, the professor planned a killer robot to kill them. He says, if you've discovered this room, then that means that your memories, you've got your real memories back, and you've been compromised, and I have to kill you or reprogram you.
Surprise.
So he has this machine called Talos that's really destructive and has rockets coming out of its nipples attack them.
Right.
And I like there's another good line from Beast where Silver Fox is like, "You gotta help me, Blue Boy." He's like, "My name is Mr. McCoy, Madam, not Blue Boy." And that line struck a chord with me because of my job. And this is gonna be so weird, but I have all these people call me Mr. William because that's my first name.
Yeah.
And but my name is Mr. Simpson. Not that I want them to call me Mr. Simpson. Call me Will, Willie, William, whatever you want. But like when you call
like
me
the Mr. First name combo is weird for you.
Yeah, well, also because there's a person in my office called Ms. Williams, so it leads to a lot of confusion at my job, and people think like they connect me with her calls because I'm Mr. William, but they really need to speak to Ms. Williams, and it just drives me nuts. So I relate to Beast here, wanting to be addressed properly. So I find myself at age 33 yelling at these like young people in the call center or whatever, and other like younger secretaries or something at my job. Just like, my name is Mr. Simpson, damn it. I don't say it like that. I try to be much nicer. But, like, just the fact that, like, why I'm declaratively calling myself Mr. Simpson, like, I'm on my dad, like, that kind of hurts my soul a little bit, too. But it's like I have to do it out of necessity.
Welcome to adulthood.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God. Please make it stop. Anyway, so they fight this Talos guy. Like I said, he's blasting rockets out of his nipples. That's kind of funny. They blow up the first one, but then, lo and behold, another one reappears, more murderous. And Beast is the only one sort of left standing because the Talos uses, like, some kind of brain wave on the four other people to knock them out. So Beast, luckily, there's a truck nearby. It still works. And Beast, like, loads up all our heroes and villains onto the truck and drives away as the Weapon X facility explodes yet again. And, it's here where everybody starts to saying their goodbyes. Silver Fox, well, Maverick says goodbye. He's kind of funny. There's a line where Wolverine says, "Nice suit." And Maverick says, "Thanks, I'll refer you to my tailor." I thought just this French-Canadian accent I thought was funny in that moment. But so, you know, I guess they're friends. So they part on good terms. Sabretooth just wanders off. He doesn't get to say goodbye to anyone. He hates everybody. But then there's, like, the confrontation between Wolverine and Silver Fox as they say goodbye, which was really weird.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Like, how would you describe their goodbye?
I mean, he, like, gets very wistful about it. And it's, like, some of that had to be real. Like, I carved our names in the door of the cabin. But then in, like, the implanted memories, the carving wasn't there. So it means there must have been a real version and a fake version. Uh-huh. And she's like, whatever, it's in the past. And he, like, totally blows him off.
Yeah.
But then, like, that scene, the whole thing doesn't add up to me because, like, okay, they go their separate ways and, like, he's, like, heartbroken or whatever. And I don't know what he expected was going to come from that confrontation, but whatever. Anyway, then, like, the camera pans over to, like, a close by tree where their names are carved in it, which is not a door. So it doesn't match up with his original story to begin with. So is that, I mean, I guess it's, like, confirming that some of it was real.
Yeah.
But, like, their memories were just too, like, messed around with.
Well, to me, the weird thing is his whole attitude's like, we can make it work, Silver Fox.
Right.
Like, we can still be together, you know, after 30 years or whatever it's been at this point. And he's just, like, weirdly needs that connection still. And she, like,
She's just like, I don't think so. And she, like, flies off.
Yeah. He's just and he kind of had that vibe with Yuriko, too, who's trying to kill him and is now hideously deformed.
Well, he's a real, like, lonely guy.
And he's also really romantic and kind of, like, really noble in a way when it comes to love.
And he's not getting anything back from Jean Grey.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, Silver Fox seems like a good match for him.
Past romances.
I know, but it's just so weird. Like that moment, he's trying to make it happen so quick. It's like really desperate and kind of sad, right?
Well, he is kind of sad.
Yeah, that's true. It is, you know, let's talk about like Wolverine as a character of fiction. I mean, do you think he's a great character?
I thought you were going to say, let's talk about Felix.
We can do that too.
he's a good character.
I mean, like, there's a reason they keep going to, like, all these backstories, and he's center of all attention.
He's complex and multidimensional, and he's lived for 200 years, and he has a unique set of powers and life experiences.
But I just always think it's interesting that he has this tortured romantic side as well, where he's all these past loves, and it's also tragic for him, too.
Yeah.
Like, do you see Wolverine as, like, he's this handsome guy that inspires... like, all these women, you know, all these great romances, or does it... To me, like, the comic book version of Wolverine doesn't seem like it would really inspire that.
I think we've talked about that before, where he's, like, super, like, burly, hairy. And he looks like he'd be smelly, like, that kind of thing. But part of his character also is that he's 200 years old, right?
Well, but he looks like he's 40.
He looks, but it's, like, he's jaded is the point. So when he was young
Also, he's not quite 200. He's, like, maybe he's, like, 140, 150.
Right, okay. Like, yeah, whatever. But more than 100 years old, right? Yeah. So, like, when you're young, you're, like, optimistic usually. Yeah. Like, I haven't been jaded by experience yet. I can imagine him being, like, a romantic when he's younger, you know? Yeah. And, like, there's a vestige of that now, but now he is jaded because he's had all these really painful experiences.
Yeah. I'm going to give a really weird analogy. So, Galactus, the world eater, right? The big purple guy that eats planets.
Yeah.
He looks like he looks like Will Ferrell in a purple crown, you know, essentially like a big, like, white doofus man that's the size of, like, the sun, essentially.
Yeah.
But Galactus says, like, I only look like what your species comprehends I look like, because I'm so incomprehensible as a force of nature that, like, your brains make me look like what's familiar to you.
Okay.
So when you see Galactus go to other worlds, if he goes to the green insect world, he looks like a large green insect.
Right.
You know, if he goes to the purple, blue striped person world, that's what he looks like.
Right.
So I want to say that.
That's a whole, like, religious analogy in itself, you know?
Yeah, isn't that awesome? That's such a great detail about Galactus.
Anyway.
But I want to say about Wolverine, the way he's depicted in the comics, I feel like, based on the type of story they're telling about him, they kind of alter the way he looks.
Yeah.
So when it's, like, the Wolverine's, like, a badass, like, angry loner, he's kind of, like, really ferocious looking and smelly, you know, like, and just really, like, violent looking and scary with his werewolf face and, like, crinkly, you know, slightly older skin.
Yeah.
But when they're doing, like, a Wolverine goes to Japan, he's in love story, they draw him, like, more romantic looking and more like a dreamboat in a weird way. His hair is, like, more, like romantically drawn, you know what I mean? Like, it like drips over his face in that way, you know what I mean? Like the Twilight guy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I know,
like,
what you're
a
saying.
Sexy vampire as opposed to, like, a scary werewolf, depending on what type of story they're telling.
That's fine for me. I'm not mad about that.
No,
that's,
I'm just saying,
like, pretty accurate to real life. You know what I mean? Like, when you feel angry, you look angry and like, whatever it is, haggard or bedraggled.
I just,
and, like,
think
your like clothes and hair are a mess and, like, you don't care, you know? And then, like, when you're dressing up to go out someplace fancy, like, you pull it together and, like, you look better.
I just think more than any other character, his appearance alters based on, like, whatever emotion they need out of him from the story. And I think that's interesting. You know,
one of the dynamic parts of his personality is that he puts up a wall of toughness, but then, of course, like, he's got, like, a soft underbelly, you know what I mean? Like, so that's their way of showing that he is emotionally affected much more than he's gonna try to show, you know?
They've written, like, a tremendous amount of, like, complexity into his character, and I think even now, whatever the current comics are going on, he's more of a leader now and more of, like, he's smarter. I mean, he's always been smart, and I've argued on this show that he's smarter than the other characters give him credit for. But
again, it's not that they don't think he's smart. It's that he's impulsive because he is so emotionally driven. So it overrides his smartness. And that's why they find him to be a risk or...
But also his impulsiveness is based in, like, 150 years of experience.
Yeah.
So he kind of knows instinctually how to attack and how to win.
Right.
Like, a small example in this episode, when Sabretooth is barging at him in the door... and Wolverine's completely enraged by the sight of him. He hates Sabretooth with all his being. They show, like, how clever Wolverine is. He doesn't just, like, lunge at him straight at his face. He sort of, like, does, like, a duke out, like, backflip and, like, kicks over the back of his head.
Yeah.
Because that's how he always gets the advantage on him. So he's just so instinctually, like, smart when it comes to fighting like that, too.
Well, he's also fought this guy, like, a billion times before.
But it's not like that his rage overtakes him so much that he gets stupider in the moment. He just kind of knows how to... like, be the ultimate killing machine, too, in a way.
I mean, I've said before that, like, I feel like he's overused or over-talked about or something.
That's the ultimate, like, Wolverine discussion end point, that it's, like, too much.
Yes, and in some ways I still think it is, but, like, to go back to your original question, like, is he a great character? Like, without even really meaning to launch into anything too deep, we just spent, like, several minutes talking about him and all the complexities of his character. It's, so, like,
he's
to me, the end point is, like, yes, he is a great character if he can spark that.
Yeah, he's risen to Batman levels of complexity and darkness. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not like Batman. He's not the equivalent of Batman in Marvel, in terms of like what the character is and what he does. But he's equivalent in terms of like emotionally, he's like Batman in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and he's got a similar mask to Batman. He's got pointy ears.
Right.
So he's like kind of like the Batman of Marvel. So he's interesting. You know, my last question about Wolverine to you, and this is something I've always wrestled with. At the end of Wolverine, what's it called? Wolverine 2, where he goes to Japan. I can't remember the name of it. The Wolverine.
That's another similarity to Batman. Their connection to, like,
to Japan. Yeah, they're both ninjas. Yeah, you're right. That's
and
true.
You know what? If I had to choose, I would take a Batman story over a Wolverine story any day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But...
You would.
That wasn't going to be your question.
It depends, but I feel like Wolverine and Batman, you know, it depends on who's writing it. So it's like, Batman's been bad too, you know, like an overdone as well.
That's true.
At the end of that movie, The Wolverine, this is a stupid point. You're not going to be happy with this question. But he, like, his other female character friend, I forget her name, gives him a box. And in it is the yellow Wolverine outfit that we actually never see Hugh Jackman wear in the whole series.
Uh-huh.
But my question to you, do you think that yellow Wolverine outfit could work on a big screen that we've never seen a human wear?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think that could be pulled off? It's not going to look
like
ridiculous?
A smart costume designer somewhere who could make it happen. Yeah.
I don't know. I always wonder about that. Maybe I feel like maybe they have to do the classic brown one, which is the same as the yellow one, but just brown. You know what I'm talking about? It's like maybe brown.
The brown
would make,
one would be good, yeah.
Yeah, but like you know what? My problem is like I feel like they would instinctually put this like weird like military padding that they put on all these superhero outfits
with like the abs.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know what I mean. But it would be more like a body armor type thing. Like it'd be for body armor. That's why he's wearing this ridiculous costume.
Yeah,
I think like the only way it really works, like viscerally. It has to be skin tight. I think I don't know. I don't really know if it would work, but I think that's the way you would sell it to me. I think if it was, like, doing it as body armor would be a bit of a cop-out and look kind of crappy. And I feel like the actor would be swallowed up by that costume in a way that's not visually appealing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, you really have to take it to the next level of fantasy and stick the next Wolverine actor in some kind of weird, skin-tight CGI spandex scenario. And make him like this weird monstrous guy. But, you know, to me that's the most intriguing thing about Marvel coming to Disney is that I think they're going to do like the costumes more accurately, and I just wonder how they're going to do with the X-Men. Because the X-Men all have like ridiculously colored, like,
I mean, I don't personally...
outrageous outfits.
I don't see a conflict with doing that. Like, they tried to go dark and then whatever... They're the X-Men. It doesn't need any explanation. If you want to use yellow spandex, just do it.
Yeah, I agree
with
that.
No one's going to care.
But, yeah, I agree. But it's not that... It's just like, will it look good? That's the question. That's always going to be the question.
Right, because they try to make such like a realistic environment for them.
It's like we're beyond justifying the choice of the colors. Like, who cares? Yellow, brown, green, whatever it is. Like, but is it filmable in real life that it's not so ridiculous that it's stupid?
Well...
I say just go for it.
Yeah.
And you know, results be damned.
I think so, too. I don't know.
And just say this is who the X-Men are, you know, and it's kind of... I mean, and the reasoning could just be they're mutants, they're social outcasts as it is, they've formed their own culture, and this is the type of stuff they like wearing.
I don't think there even needs to be reasoning. I think it's X-Men. Like.
Yeah, you're right. That's the real answer. <it. laughs> Yeah, they're just X-Men. Okay. All right, well, that's all I have for this episode. I want to say that's the end of season 3. Hooray!
Yay.
Right before we recorded this, I had in my mind, I hadn't even brought it up to you yet. I don't want to jump to season 4 just yet.
Okay.
I want to do maybe a bonus episode of some kind. So some kind of surprise next week for our fans. I haven't pinned down what it's going to be yet, but I don't think we're ready to jump into season 4.
Okay.
So, put that in your calendars, X-Task fans. And now I want to promote all our usual stuff. I want to say follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Facebook group on Facebook. We always gain new members all the time. It's a lot of fun. Bryce had some fun questions this week.
Yeah.
What was his question? It was like,
if you could be a member of the X-Men, what would your power be?
Yeah.
What would your outfit be?
Yeah. What color would your costume
what
be?
What team would you be on?
And what team would you be on?
Yeah.
What did you pick?
I enjoyed that.
Do you want to share that with the audience, or should people just go there?
Just go read it if you're interested.
Right, if you're interested. That'll be the incentive to join. I liked your uniform outfit. It's kind of like hard to understand, but it's still interesting. So join the X-Men Task Facebook group. Follow also X-Men Task on Twitter. They're Eric and Julie Leewald. They wrote previously on X-Men. They're the writers from the show. So we recommend you following them too. Oh, rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes if you can.
Yes, please.
To increase our visibility to the podcast universe. Do you have any last words for our friends in Canada, Sonia?
Oh, Canada.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.